Why are you playing music from the Cialis commercial?
I didn't think of that. Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast. For Saturday, July 25th, 2009, this is Steve Borsch. I'm your host with other hosts, Graham Thickens.
Hello from Pequot Lakes, Lakes Latte Coffee Shop.
All right. Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
I just can't get over this music.
That's the first thing I thought of, too.
Are you trying to imply something here?
You know, I was searching for PodSafe music today on the PodSafe Music Network, and I came up with PJ Style Blues by AGT. AJT, a French geek and Apple lover and musician, obviously, living in France. And I thought, PJ Style Blues, hey, that's how I'm feeling this morning. So,
well, I know I'm up for the call.
And I'm strangely aroused. I'm not sure why.
It would have been fine if you hadn't said the Cialis thing. I would have been just all right with it. Anyway, you guys are doing all right, huh?
Doing great.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Excellent.
Hey, what's the deal with those bathtubs, by the way?
Yeah, that's one of the marketing questions of all time. Bathtubs?
Oh, I know. Well, and of course, Alex, my 14-year-old, every single time the Cialis commercials or Viagra or whatever come on, he just sort of looks at me. I just go, Alex, you've done the joke now 57 times. Please, just not again. And he says, well, you know, Dad.
It's no joke.
It's, yeah. Oh, God. He's got to leave me alone. Uh-huh. So, kind of an interesting week. There's, I don't know about you guys, but it is really getting to be a challenge to try to stay on top of everything. There's so many changes happening so quickly.
Ah, welcome to social media.
Well, and the internet as a platform. I mean, it's, you know, Chrome OS stuff and Windows 7 and then OS 10 Snow Leopard coming out and all the tablet stuff that's being discussed. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the tablet, Apple tablet looks pretty credible now. You see the thing in Apple Insider this week?
I did. Yeah. I'll put that in the show notes too, but I thought that was kind of an interesting development.
Yeah, what's interesting is that it seems that Apple is becoming a lot more porous now with these, you know, these blockbuster products that are sort of leaking out.
Well, and I think there was one particular post that I was reading about long-term evolution LTE, the next Verizon network, and why that would make sense for Apple to build devices for that, for a 4G network, rather than for CDMA, because there would be more ability to sell that device worldwide. And so I think what's happening is there's a lot of stuff that's being picked up by suppliers and by network providers. And, you know, plus there's some stuff that's just so incredibly obvious, you know, like Amazon buying Stanza, that really awesome iPhone book reading application. Well, now, why would they do that when they have the Kindle app for the iPhone? And I looked at it as something strategic, that they wanted to make sure that they had the distribution channel on whatever device was coming.
I'm not sure of the question.
Well, that's why they bought it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why Amazon would buy it. Yeah.
Who knows? You know, so, I've gotten to the point where I really let a lot of this stuff sift out. I mean, it is always a challenge to try and stay ahead of it. But at the same time, there is a lot to be said about just letting stuff sift through and letting people naturally filter and curate it for you. So
yeah,
I did find Amazon's purchase of Zappos interesting. That was interesting over the last week.
That was a good move for them.
I think so. Probably even a better move for Zappos.
So what do you think about the Crunch Pad?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept.
Think it's got any legs?
I don't know. It depends on the price, I think.
Okay. You'll have to explain Crunch Pad.
Well, it's go ahead.
Not let anybody assume that everybody knows everything here.
It's an open source tablet project that Mike Arrington's been championing over at TechCrunch for about a year now. And they're getting closer to releasing something, and it's supposed to be like $250 or so, and about the size of the Kindle DX, which is about the size of a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And it only runs I want to say Mozilla, but the Firefox browser.
Yeah, that's the front end to everything. Well, and Arrington was on Charlie Rose. It was about a 15-minute interview, and I watched that. And at one point, Charlie Rose asked him about it and asked him about funding. You know, did you take venture capital funding? And Arrington says, I'm not going to answer that. And he said, well, and he said something else. And Arrington says, I'm just not going to comment. I'm not going to make any comment. It's like, okay, well. So that was interesting from the standpoint of it's likely that he did, and there's a lot of people behind him on it.
So it's not necessarily open source. Is that what you're trying to say, or potentially not open source?
Well, I mean, it could be commercial open source. There's a lot of precedent for that. You know, the Magento Commerce is commercial open source. MySQL, same thing. MySQL. I mean, they're all commercial open source. Acquia now with a commercial open source version support for Drupal. So there's a lot of that stuff, but I don't know. Here's what I do know that I'm absolutely convinced of is that there will be more and more devices and the networks will become more ubiquitous and we're going to be on all the time and have access to everything with whatever we want to carry around.
You're having that chip installed next week, aren't you?
Brain? I am. Well, with voice control, imagine having a little Bluetooth headset that you could speak into and get answers back through the headset, through the earpiece. So you could just say, Phil Wilson, phone number, Lakeville, Minnesota, and then it speaks it back to you. I mean, why are we not close to that? And then the next phase would be people would say, well, I don't want some big thing hanging out of my ear. And, right. You know, then Starkey Labs builds a little insert that goes into your ear. And
it kind of reminds me of that joke where the guy is, playing golf with his buddy and he's talking into his little finger and he's holding his thumb to his ear, you know, that fake phone call. And his buddy says, what are you doing? He says, well, I've actually got a phone built into my thumb and finger and I'm talking on the phone right now. A little bit later, that same guy with the phone is, you know, squatting by the edge of the green, you know, groaning like he's, taking a big old dump. And the guy says, what are you doing now? He says, well, I got a fax coming through.
Good. Good.
Yeah. So anyway, on that note, we also ought to say what's coming up later on our discussion today. We're also going to be joined by Lisa Foote from Quingo to talk a little bit about mobile, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And let's also give a little press here to the gas pedal folks in Blogwell, which is coming up on the 13th.
Yep. And there's a post on Minovate about that and a discount code. If you put in Minovate Rocks, you can get a 10% discount code on that.
And how cool is that? It's $25 off, right?
Yeah. Well, I was had lunch with Don Smith from General Mills Thursday. And he was talking about how it's shaping up now there's some concern that there are going to be too many people that they're looking at venues. And it's like, okay, that's a good thing.
Well, I'm glad we got our registrations in.
Yep.
I just posted it on our SMB site too. So great. It'll probably sell out.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Okay, speaking of SMB real quick, and I pinged Rick Mon on this, but now all of us, I believe, are signed up on SMB at the Ning site, right? You're all members of SMB and part of the network, right? Why is it that we never get emails saying when the SMB is coming up, we see it on Twitter, and by the time you see it on Twitter, most of the tickets are gone?
He told me he stopped doing those emails a month or so ago. He told me that because I asked him the exact same question. And he apologized and said, I guess I better start doing those again. Apparently, he was assuming people would just find them without getting the email blasts.
Well, yeah, and there's no doubt about that, that the Twitter stuff, I mean, obviously it works. But at the same time, you think to yourself, well, part of the whole concept of the network is this membership has its privileges sort of thing, that that social network. So I was kind of curious about that. I didn't hear back from Rick, but then again, I sent it to the info address at SMB, so he may not have checked it yet.
Well, Phil, you sent me an email giving me a heads up that there were only 13 spots left for this next one next week. And, you know, it took maybe a half an hour for me to see that email from you. So I jump onto the site and it was sold out already.
Yeah, and the same thing. Gosh. I think, Tim, Tim, you got the same prompt from me. And what were there, like three left or something?
I think there were like 10 when I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, clearly, you know, the ability to reach a lot of people in a short period of time is being demonstrated over and over and over again. But at the same time, you may be alerting too many people at one time.
Well, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I have a lot of people that I go back and forth with, you know, trying to decide on a meeting place for coffee or lunch or whatever, and they want to use Twitter. They start to use Twitter and they DM me. And I don't have notifications set up because I get too many messages.
Right.
And I don't want to be interrupt driven. And I don't necessarily see it. And I'm not checking it all the time. And so I'm finding that to be kind of a troublesome communication method where, you know, people will put out an alert. And sometimes I will only use my iPhone to go through Twitter. And I might scroll through, you know, 100 messages or something. But I don't, if I haven't been on it for like 6 or 8 hours, I'm not going to see everything.
Mm-hmm. And then again, it's a matter of you've got to find the best way. If you're trying to meet with an organization or communicate with an entire group or organization, you've got to figure out what the best method of using, you know, that communication is. You know, for example, at the Association for Downloadable Media, we use Yahoo groups. We have a CRM system that we use, and we also have a mailing list. So, you know, when we're trying to communicate with the members, we hit them on all three. And still sometimes people don't get that information. So you really have to figure out what the best way of doing it. And you also have to give enough time to come back because it's not going to happen instantaneously for most people.
Right.
Until you get that chip installed in your brain, you're not going to.
Well, and you know what? I was interested in this, the Twitter 101 that came out in terms of teaching people things because it's little things like people that have been on Skype for some time will send you a quick IM asking if this is a good time for them to call you or not, and rather than just launch the call. Mm-hmm. And that's a little etiquette piece that I know I appreciate because sometimes, you know, the thing's on all the time. I may or may not be able to make the call. And I'm finding with Twitter, there are things that a lot of people that use it often or frequently get bugged at, and that, you know, like the DM thing, trying to set up a lunch and send instructions back and forth on where to meet and so forth. People are just, they sort of rail against that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pleased to see that Twitter 101 come out, but also dismayed when I saw Ashton Kutcher come out about the fact that Twitter will change media.
He is a brilliant guy.
Oh, amazing.
Cutting edge.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think this whole thing kind of emphasizes that, yes, though technology may allow us instantaneous communication, it doesn't necessarily mean the receiver lives an instantaneous lifestyle. They're not necessarily set up to respond instantaneously. And I mean, that's where technology and, you know, human behavior collide all the time. Because you can deliver it doesn't mean it's getting through.
Yep. Well, so Tim, I got a question for you because I know that you were paying more attention to it than I was. What were your thoughts about the social media job crowdsourcing activity at Best Buy?
Well, a couple of things. One is it was interesting that there weren't that many submissions, and the submissions that they did get at IdeaX, there were only like 18 votes, I think, for the top vote getter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but there were some good ideas, actually, that were submitted. And it looks like from the post on Barry Judge's blog, he's the CMO of Best Buy, that they're going to repost the job on Monday and take many of the ideas that were, you know, that surfaced during that that process. So it's interesting to see that they're actually taking feedback from the, you know, from the blogosphere and Twitter sphere on this, but I'm not sure if it's really, you know, going to change that role very much.
Yeah. So Tim has, so the job hasn't been reposted yet.
No, it's supposed to come out on Monday.
Okay, because she, I remember hearing it was supposed to be reposted the week of the 20th. So that's interesting. I don't know, the concept of the open source, or the, you know, the crowdsourced job description was interesting to me from the standpoint. It's interesting to get feedback, but shouldn't a company really specifically know what they're looking for rather than asking for somebody to tell them what they're looking for?
On, well, ideally, note, ideally, yes.
Yeah, and you want to, do you want me to tell you what I heard?
Yes.
I heard they don't even know if they are going to hire a full-time person yet. And this was from someone who was interviewed by the hiring manager, and that they may decide they'll do it with contractors. So you talk about things being up in the air. Maybe the crowdsourcing confused them so much they don't even know what they're going to do.
Well, again, it comes back to the company has to decide what their goals are and what, who they want to put in charge of delivering on those goals, rather than, you know, finding out what everybody else's goals are, I guess. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the whole, you know, social media thing opens up a big old can of worms. And I think that they're finding that. I think, Graham, you had mentioned something about a Twitter exchange with Barry Judge at Best Buy CMO. And we've talked a little bit about the TWELP desk and what they're doing at Best Buy. So, I mean, they've opened up all these channels that it could serve to confuse and really slow down a process.
Yeah. That Twitter exchange that guy posted about a price discrepancy at Best Buy. Did you guys all see that?
Yeah.
No, I was looking for it this morning and I couldn't find it. I'm sorry. Could you explain it a little bit, Graham?
Well, he got into a discussion with Barry and really was steamed that something he was trying to buy for his kid was listed at $99 on the website. And he goes into the store and they're trying to charge him $149. He goes, whoa, wait a minute here. And the cashier walks over to the kiosk, goes to the website and goes, you know what? You're right. I'm only going to charge you $99 for this. Well, he got real steamed and said, I thought Best Buy already went through this once and solved the problem. And wasn't there a big hubbub and even a lawsuit or something like that? So he's a big Twitter user. He's an executive. He gets on Twitter and starts having a discussion with Barry, and Barry starts getting real steamed and finally just tells him, you know, that's it, I'm out of here. You know, I'm sick of discussing this or something. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, it shows that I think if these guys are going to go onto social media and Twitter as Barry has and purportedly be doing customer care kind of stuff, you know, maybe they need to realize that they have to tone it down a little bit and, you know, be prepared to, you know, be a little more civil. But, you know, there are those that argue, well, the guy was just setting him up, too. I have a buddy who thinks it was just a drive-by, you know, and he set up Barry.
You know what, though? Graham, I got to tell you that I looked at that whole thing and my immediate reaction was, oh my God, it took me years to learn how to write emails so people wouldn't misconstrue what I was saying. And how the hell do you do that in 140 characters?
Yeah. Well, but I think it came out that, you know, that the guy who was on the other end was doing a pretty good job of presenting his case, and he was looking for a specific answer, and I don't think he really ever got it. I think Barry just said, you know what, I'm done. He said something like that, you know, and just like, screw you, I'm done talking about this. And I don't, you know, I'm sorry, I don't think that came off very well, but, you know, you live and learn on social media. It's, you know, there are no rules, and you're right. It's extremely hard for him to explain it. He could have pointed him to a blog post or a policy page or something, right? You know, and I didn't see that, but
yeah. Anyways. I mean, Chris Brogan did a post on this, and he brought up some good issues about, you know, you can take things offline. You can, you know, he didn't have to get into this confrontation basically and leave it that way. And I hearken back to the folks at Comcast who are doing, you know, this kind of stuff all the time. And if you follow Frank Eliason, he has developed probably some of the best practices on Twitter of handling irate customers in a respectful manner.
And for the for listeners, he's the at Comcast Cares guy.
Maybe we should move the discussion into what Best Buy is doing with this whole team of Twitterers. Can any of you comment on that?
The 12th desk, is that what that is, or 12th force, or what is it? 12th
yeah.
force?
Yeah, I guess so.
No, I really don't. I haven't followed much. I think the last post I saw, I can't even remember who it was. I believe it was CC Chapman. I actually posted something on Twitter asking a question about Best Buy, and he reported a couple hours later that he'd heard nothing in answer to his question from the 12th force, but had gotten his question answered by a bunch of other folks that weren't associated with Best Buy.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and it's because I've gone in store.
Yes.
The Eden Prairie store, which is now their showcase store, on many, many occasions. And I've had questions about, a Dweebazarb, a cable or something. And I can talk to three people, deeply explain what I want, and get three separate answers. Mm-hmm. And so these are people that are, you know, working the high def TV area and all the video stuff. And they, you know, I get three different answers. People don't know. And it turns out, you know, I can stand there with my iPhone and dig into, you know, questions about this particular Marantz or Sony receiver and will it do X, and find the answer myself right there in the store. So I struggle with, I mean, I admire them getting in the game with 12 Force.
Yeah.
I really do, because you know what? At the end of the day, you got to keep taking risks. You got to keep trying yep. stuff. Who knows what's going to stick? Maybe there'll be some automated way at some point where you'll be able to automate the sending back of answers or links. And so I really admire the effort, but I think in practice, it's only going to answer the really super basic stuff.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think it's not a matter of if things are going to go wrong when you start something new like this, or you start a project, or you build something, you know. Are there going to be problems? Yeah. It's a matter of how do you respond to those problems? How do you address those problems? Because I think that it'll be interesting to see how they modify this, because it's very difficult when you have, quote unquote, a group of people, or the 12th force. Is that what it is? Is it 12th force or 12th desk? I can't even remember what
12th,
it is.
12th force.
12th force. Force. Yeah. You know, you have this group of people. Obviously, you have different levels of communication skills. You have different levels of knowledge. You have different levels, or you know, different expertise in different areas. So it'll be interesting to see how they come together, and if a group can answer the question, or you know, if it comes down to one individual.
Yeah. See, I think we should add Lisa. What do you think?
I think we should add Lisa, and because you know, this is probably a good place to lock in, because we're talking about being on all the time.
Bingo.
And that also, you know, means with mobile, we'll even be able to be even more on all the time.
There you go.
Get it?
All right.
Be a moron all the time. There you go.
So let's add Lisa. Hello, Lisa. It's the gang.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very good. How are you all?
Good. So this is Lisa Foote from Quingo.net, the mobile solutions company.
How's it going, Lisa? It's Phil.
Excellent. Hey, Phil. Do I see Graham on the line as well?
Yeah. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Graham. Sounds like you're outside enjoying this beautiful day.
Well, yeah. I'm under an umbrella at a coffee shop in Pequot Lakes, and it's drizzling. But this is the quietest spot I could find. The coffee shop's noisier inside. So.
And Tim Elliott is also on, Lisa.
Hi.
Hey, good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
And I did have some theme music. Do you recognize that?
Well, it's not the Cialis ad, that's for sure.
It's off the website. It's off your website. Sorry.
It is indeed. Thank you.
So what's been going on, Lisa? Lisa's actually been doing a couple of presentations that I've seen on mobile. She addressed, I believe, and I also talked about in a recent Minovate post. Lisa presented on mobile along with Justin Grammons at the Conclave, which is a broadcast convention. And also, she did a presentation the other night over at Mobile Twin Cities.
Yes, and that same evening, that same Tuesday night that I spoke to Mobile Twin Cities, I was rushing over from a Jen Caneco Cane Camp. We had a mobile boot camp that very evening. So I've been doing a lot of speaking lately. It's been fun.
So tell us about mobile in 5 seconds.
Yeah. Actually, prepping for this, knowing how hip the audience is, I wanted to kind of expand folks' thinking about mobile. So I'm going to give you three mobile trends to watch. They are cross-platform development tools.
Such as?
Google and demographics. So let's start with the cross-platform development tools. Cross-platform development tools, sometimes called Write Once, Run Anywhere, or WORA, have been sort of the dream of everyone. Developers just want to write once and have it run on any mobile platform. There are two to watch. Nokia recently acquired a company called QT. That's the two letters of the alphabet, QT. And there's also another Write Once, Run Anywhere platform called Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S. Rhodes is Ruby-based. They've both been very active and picking up steam. Rhodes, for example, just announced their simplified pricing structure July 21st. They were charging, it's an open platform, and they were charging a percentage of revenue for commercial use. They've now simplified that to $500 up front for commercial application use. So that's a trend to watch because that will really unhandcuff release developers once those become more widely used to develop for any platform. So we'll get rid of the restrictions, for example, that developers face today in picking a platform or two platforms. They can write for anything.
Hey, but it should be noted that even though those are the sort of universal templates, there is some tweaking that's involved from platform to platform, is there not?
There is, and you have to be aware of what specific device features are available. And you all know this is sort of the summer of the smartphone intro from the Palm Pre earlier this year to the BlackBerry Tour, T-O-U-R. So lots and lots of devices coming out, and they just consistently upgrade their features. So yes, developers do have to pay attention. And they also need to pay attention. One thing I always talk about is pay attention to what your audience is and what they're carrying.
But isn't it, if you're a developer, isn't it true that the iPhone is really the only application store that has any sort of momentum at this point? So that should be the target platform?
Actually, interestingly enough, you're segueing into my second point. So thank you.
There we go. Also, do me a favor, Lisa. Move your microphone just a little bit away from your mouth. You're popping your peas a bit. And
there
just
you
want
go.
To make
Is
it
that?
Easier for everybody.
Yep, thank you. So
too far away now.
There you go. Just keep coaching me. I'll get it eventually.
There you go.
There you go. Right there.
Perfect. Don't move a muscle. So my second point was actually going to be about everything Google. When people think about Google and mobile, they think about Android, of course, but there's also Google Voice to check out. Not incredibly useful quite yet, but definitely something that they're going to put a lot of effort into. So I would advise listeners, if they don't yet have a Google Voice account, get one. As Phil knows, I talked Tuesday night about myself snagging a vanity account, so I was all jacked up about that. Google Wave, if you haven't looked at the video, do be sure to check that out. And finally, getting back to that point about the Apple application store, which is a very well taken point, Vic Gundrota, who is the VP of engineering at Google, July 17th predicted at Mobile Beat, which is a conference in San Francisco, he believes that the web basically has won and that over the next few years, the browser, for economic reasons, is going to become the platform that matters most, and that's where Google is investing. He also revealed in an article about that Mobile Beat appearance, which I found fascinating, I didn't know this, that Steve Jobs originally wanted to disseminate those iPhone applications over the web, and that he himself saw that that was ultimately going to be the way. So that would imply that eventually, and you know, nowadays, eventually turns out to be often very short, we may actually see the application stores become a non-issue.
What do you think the time frame is for something? What's the time frame for something like that, Lisa?
You know, it's hard to know, right? But again, you know, not that Google knows everything and not that they're right about everything. They're human and they make mistakes like anybody else. But I would urge you to look up his comments from July 17th at Mobile Beat, BEAT, in San Francisco to read more about that. I do believe that that is what's going to happen. And as far as time frame goes, I've been consistently stunned over the past 3 years at the speed with which things have rolled out, happened, evolved, changed. And you all know, Graham, I know, knows a lot about cloud computing, and this is cloud computing for the mobile set.
Well, let's go back and rewind it a sec. Did I hear you say that these application stores are going to go away and everything's going to sort of be over the web and free and open?
Yeah, not free and open necessarily, right? You can still charge. Applications can live on the web, or they can live on your phone. Or remember, too, they can be disseminated more openly through the web, which is to say a developer can put it up on the web, not have to go through an iPhone store. The main thing that the iPhone has brought us, and it's wonderful, I love my iPhone, is the discoverability. Because quite frankly, if you've got, you know, a Wild West type approach and you've got tens of thousands of applications on the web, how the heck are you going to find them? And you even have problems nowadays on the iPhone App Store, right? In iTunes, finding things sometimes that are useful or relevant, or you don't have any trouble finding ones that are popular, but sometimes it can be a little bit difficult. But when you think about those two trends together, coming together, the ubiquity and the ability to develop for any device, and the ability to disseminate more freely and openly, that really does change the game in terms of a developer's viewpoint or a user's viewpoint. So I do think those are, I wanted to get to trends to watch, not necessarily what's going to happen next month, because who knows, or even next year. But I do think it's interesting that these seem to be evolutionary things that are happening.
Right. But I mean, the iPhone is out in front of everyone by a mile. And I think that it's going to be very difficult for Palm with the webOS to catch up. And I think that what Google is doing with Android is extremely interesting, and it probably has the best chance of anything at giving the folks at Apple a run for their money. But it'll still probably be the second OS. And the real lock-in that Apple has exploited for the last decade with the iPod has been the iTunes stack. So I don't see that going anywhere.
Nope. And I make no comment about iTunes per se. And don't disagree with a lot of what you've said. Palm Pre is, I think Phil can speak to this. It's, you know, it was pretty overhyped. And quite frankly, it's difficult for me to see Palm with what they're doing with the Pre, to be kind of hard-headed about it. It's difficult to see it as much else other than dressing the company up for sale.
If they're attempting to make a run on Apple and apps, first, they don't have enough apps that are open yet. Plus, the incredibly bad campaign that they're waging on TV is their ad campaign is just too esoteric BS. You know, they really need to come after this rather than be artsy. And
is a little too touchy feely for you,
it's
Phil?
It's just a load of crap, is what.
Well,
it seems like it's
a smartphone for weird people.
Yes, it is.
You guys don't think that's a great brand position there?
No, good. I don't think it's can be extended very
yeah,
far.
Yeah, so
and as you know, Lisa, and as you referenced, Lisa, I was a big pulling for Palm person when they started rolling out the Pre, and I was really up for it, and I was totally disenfranchised, not only by, you know, not necessarily by the Pre so much, but as by the Sprint handling of the Pre, but it's really turning out to be really disappointing.
Yeah. So Palm is definitely not one of my trends to watch.
Well, if I could just interject on one thing you said too, as you talked about the volume of apps and how hard it is to find, I will tell you that I keep seeing these numbers. You know, first it's 50,000 and 55. Now what is it? 65,000 in the Apple App Store. Yep. And there's not a snowball's chance in Hades that, you know, if you've got a nice little app that, unless you've got some buzz built around it, that anyone's ever going to find it.
Right. And developers are getting, and this was actually an observation that I saw Dan Grigsby make recently, more recent developers to the Apple fold are increasingly pretty unhappy with Apple and the handling of approvals, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't want to kind of get too stuck on that, because I wanted to get back to a comment about Android. One reason that I think Android is another reason that I think Android is something to watch is Android's market share of web browsing worldwide went from 3% in April to 7% in May. So one point I wanted to get back to was Android and the interesting rumors that we keep hearing. Again, they may be just people want to believe this, and so they're rumor-mongering, or there may be some fact behind it. Nokia is rumored to be going toward Android and potentially dropping Symbian.
This would
be huge, because it's easy to forget in the U.S. that Nokia is worldwide by far the most common handset, and Symbian is the most common way by far for people to get to the web through mobile devices. So that would be keep just kind of one eye on that, because that has the potential to be pretty earth-shattering if that were to evolve.
Do you think they would ease the migration of their current customers by doing some sort of S60 UI thing on top of Android?
They would have to, right? I mean, they couldn't. They're such a large company with such a large installed base. Symbian is so ubiquitous that, you know, obviously they can't just, good point, they can't just flip the switch. But if they have intent in that direction, these are very smart people. And, you know, Symbian's just a dog. And they know it is, I'm sure. They're not stupid.
Well, it's a dated OS, I guess, would be charitable way to say it.
Yeah, it's
as we say.
It's sort of like Palm OS, the traditional Palm OS.
Yes,
is in the same place. You know, it still works.
Right.
It was a great OS back in the day, but yep. Today it's very dated.
Yep, maybe we will call it a workhorse instead of a dog. How's that? An aging workhorse.
How about a dog work? How about a working
dog work?
I'd say
it's a horse one step away from the glue factory.
Yeah, there you go.
No. Let's say rather a horse one step away from being retired out to green pastures.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a nice way.
That's much kinder.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah, it's like taking the cat to the farm, right? Is that what we're saying here?
How many mobile OSs can the market support? I mean, we've got
right now we've got seven or eight.
The iPhone OS, we've got Android, we've got the RIM BlackBerry OS, and Windows Mobile, and then there's a host of others, including WebOS,
right.
Symbian, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, is it like the desktop market where there's going to be, you know, two or three dominant?
Yes. Yes, I believe that's the case. I like to say that we're going through a very analogous situation to, for those of us old enough to remember, to when PCs really didn't evolve out of the hobbyist realm until, you know, Windows, right? Until Windows became a ubiquitous enough operating system. And we had the killer app, which was in those days Lotus 1-2-3 that everybody had to have. And by the way, there is some belief that mobile banking is going to be that killer app for the mobile world.
If any of us have any money left.
It's because we're investing in technologies that will make
it. That's right.
You're investing in the dogs.
So right now, your top three runners, front runners, I mean, your three front runners to really own the market are clearly the Apple, the Android, and the RIM, simply RIM because it's been there for so long.
Yes, and BlackBerry has stumbled quite a bit in the past 2 years, and they have not, I don't know if they got fat and lazy, but, you know, they put a huge, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, the infrastructure that they put in to play nice with corporate IT, you know, behind the firewall, as the phrase goes, is massive, and their installed base is massive, and they have a pretty entrenched position, and, you know, you can get lazy from that spot, and I don't think they're going to stay lazy. I mean, I think people who count BlackBerry down and out are foolish. They're not just going to lay down on the road and let all that go by. But to your point, I think there are going to be two or three, as we have two desktop operating systems that are common today. And then I think you're going to see a flood of innovation and development. Again, going back to the first point about Qt and Rhodes, as those tools get more powerful, the Ruby world in particular, and I will say I'm a self-described, admitted Ruby bigot in favor of, those tools are just so agile and so fast. I think you're going to see wonderful, wonderful new things for the mobile world.
Well, one of the things I'm curious about, maybe you'll touch on this, but
Is why does she say Nokia instead of Nokia, right?
Well, there's that, of course. But
that's how they pronounce it.
Yeah. If you're over in Finland, Chris has
there
a bad.
There you
that's
go.
Bad,
then you get your Nokia.
That's a, yep, Helsinki, one of my favorite cities in the world.
There you go. But what I'm curious about is, and I've kind of pinged some different people about this, Grigsby, Dan Grigsby being one of them, about tools. Mm-hmm. And for instance, there is a WP Touch, a mobile interface for WordPress. And you can, I've got it on Minivate, and you can look at it on an iPhone, and up comes this really nice looking UI for the posts. Now, it's not the entire site, so it's not the homepage, it's just the blog posts. But I look at stuff like that, and I'm interested in delivering a UI with key content through smartphones. What do you see as trends in democratization of tools for normal humans so that we're able to deliver content and value through mobile devices in different ways?
Interestingly enough, people are at this point going to think we scripted this because you just gave me a beautiful segue into my third trend to watch.
Oh, all right.
My third trend to watch is demographics. If you're interested in the sector, if interested in thinking about it synthetically and with an eye toward the future, study the way younger age brackets are using their mobiles and study their attitudes. Some of the differences between younger, and I'm slicing this pretty thinly. For a client this past week, I was doing research that went down, for example, to slices like 12 to 18 years old, 18 to 24 years old. That was some research, among other things, on iPhone ownership. But it is absolutely fascinating, the differences. Some of them are clearly easy to predict and explain. For example, people who tend to be older and more affluent tend to have more BlackBerries because they're employer provided. That's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. But others seem to be more secular, if I can call it that, versus just a maturation cycle, meaning mobile banking usage among the young is pretty astounding. Social media usage via mobile is pretty astounding. The replacement versus supplemental use of the mobile versus the desktop is an extreme among the younger users is an extremely important thing to watch. And Steve, it goes right to your point. If I'm 20 and I'm accustomed now to, I actually don't like to use a desktop, that is going to give developers a huge market where they don't have to persuade Tim or persuade Graham or persuade Lisa to consider doing a WordPress activity through their mobile instead of their desktop. They're going to have a population of people who want it on their mobile already, and they're hungry and ready for it. So that's my third big important thing to watch is demographics and how younger people use these devices differently.
Well, and I love to look at data from the big analyst groups. So when Gartner came out, one of the things I do on Google is search and do file type colon PDF or file type colon PPT, and I can find all these files. I mean, I'm sometimes stunned. Here's a $3,500 report that somebody accidentally exposed on the web and it got spidered. But one of the things that Gartner had in this lead up to Smartphone World 2009, which is next month in Seoul, Korea, there's all this data that's been compiled. And this one fun fact really stunned me. In 2012, smartphone sales will reach over 700 million units, accounting for 65% of all handset sales, and it'll represent a global market of 200 billion. I mean, that's just, when you really let that sink in for a moment, you realize, oh my God, is this an opportunity or what?
Yes, and it's going to be the always on, right?
Yep.
The always on PC in your pocket that, you know, science fiction has dreamed about for quite a while. It's coming. It's happening.
Well, this is the reality for those outside of North America and Europe anyway. I mean,
that's right.
They
use the mobile phone for everything.
That's right. And they are, it's hard for us to, proud Americans to admit, but I'm very fond of telling audiences that we're like kindergartners compared to Southeast Asia, in particular Korea or Europe, and when people go take trips, I tell them, pay attention and watch, because that's where we're going. We've been hampered, of course, by the fact that we are less regulated, interestingly enough, right? less regulation has meant more Wild West, and that has actually slowed us for universal adoption for standards, right? So it's interesting to me that that's one case. I'm not making the argument that's good or bad, but this is one case where it's actually retarded us.
Do you think that the carrier situation in the U.S. is also part of the problem?
How do you mean, that it's regionalized or?
That we've got carriers that control the handsets very tightly. There's not a easy way for you to jump from carrier to carrier, although it's if you're on the GSM side of things, you can move between T-Mobile and AT&T, but you really can't go to Verizon or Sprint because of the technology difference.
Right.
Where in Europe, everyone has basically the same technology, and you can jump carrier to carrier very quickly.
That's right, and that's what I meant by the regulatory, that they have forced, basically. It's like the difference between the U.S. and Canada in banking, right? I mean, it's just a completely different landscape. And part of that is still a regional hangover, right, because of the towers. So, you know, that part of that is the U.S. is a heck of a lot bigger than Europe geographically. So, but yes, all the points you make are absolutely right on, that is part of the problem. You know, you make an interesting observation, too, about the carriers and the handsets. I think over time, although I'm not sure how long this is going to take, that's going to break down, you know, as we see phones increasingly being jailbroken, as the phrase goes. I think that the carriers will resist commoditization to death, right? They're going to claw at that forever, but they can't help it not happen. They can't make it not happen eventually. I mean, it's inevitable. It'll just be how much they can slow it down.
Well, if you're using Android today, they're just like on Windows Mobile, which I'm currently using. And one of the reasons I'm still on Windows Mobile is that I can get ROMs from like XDA developers. And I know that in the same site, we've got Android ROMs that are out there as well that completely take the carrier locks off those phones.
Yep.
So as Android becomes more mainstream, do you see that the carrier locks will also kind of go by the wayside?
That's exactly what I'm saying. You said it better than I did. They will resist commoditization. They will resist the jailbreak activity. They will resist the SIM card, you know, phenomenon and what you just described with Android. One thing real quickly, and Phil, I don't believe you were at this meeting, but last month at Mobile Twin Cities, one of the developers demonstrated live the ability to actually re-architect the way his G1 Google Android phone handled incoming messages. And let me tell you why that's so significant. If you think of attributes of a handset like what appears on the screen and what you hear when you get an incoming message, the ability for a non-programmer user to mod those things, we now are going to have modifiable handsets. You know, think about wallpapers and ringtones on steroids. You're now going to be able to develop a look and feel for an Android type device that's so open that is tailored for, I'm just going to make this up, tweener girls who are fans of the film, you know, Night, for 40-something men who are NFL fans. And again, it's going to go way, way, way beyond wallpaper and ringtone deep into the device's behaviors. And that is also going to be a true revolution. That's kind of under my second trend to watch, which is everything Google.
I guess we're all stunned.
Well, it's an interesting discussion, and I know we've got to wrap up, but I'd like to continue talking about this maybe another day.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
Yeah,
yep,
it really is. Lisa, thank you very much for
Thanks.
Not only being patient while we were pontificating before we had you on, but also for the great insight and peek at the mobile space. And hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You guys also. And let's do it again soon.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.